This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. You can subscribe to the app on Apple and Android. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.
The Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR Radio.
The Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR Radio. That's it. Good evening, world. Here we are with our regular 2 hours of stories that may or may not be interesting to women, that hopefully are interesting to women and men also, but possibly more to women, I don't know anyway, and some wonderful women in studio, including lovely producer Amanda. Good evening, Amanda.
Good evening.
Stick your mic up and good say evening. Hi. There
hi.
We go. I've surprised you.
You don't normally do that.
I know. I just thought I'd get you
lucky. I'm on the ball, eh?
We've got a lot of women. We've got 2 women. We normally only have 1 woman, but we've got 2 brilliant women tonight. And you. And me, four billion women. And we have an album of the week, and it's a stonker. This is the album, the tracks from which I more often do as karaoke than any other album, certainly any that we've had so
Maybe
far.
Maybe treat us to a bit of that tonight.
Oh, I'm definitely going to sing. There's no getting away from that. Strap yourselves in. So let's have our first track from the album of the week. It's Blondie's Parallel Lines, and let's see what Amanda's selected.
One way or another.
One way or another. Did you know, I questioned you, Amanda. I was like, is that really on Parallel Lines? I didn't think it was. It's anyway, one of the great tracks from Parallel Lines. We'll be hearing more later on, and I'll be singing along. You'll be delighted to hear. I'm going to now welcome our first studio guest of the day, the glorious Juliet Burton. Hello.
Oh, hello. I love the word glorious.
Well,
thank
you are.
You.
There's no other way of putting it, so let's just put that out there. Glorious is what you are.
Thank you so much. And
sporting a tartan pant.
Yes, I used to live in Edinburgh for 3.5 years, so I thought I would bring a bit of Edinburgh.
Just holding on
tartan
to the tartan
leggings.
Are you doing the Edinburgh Festival this year, Juliet?
I will be doing 6 dates only of the show that I'm doing next week in Leicester Square, which was it's the 5-star award-winning show that is the main show. You know, I don't really want to say it's the main show, but it's the main show that I've been working on for over a year now, so I know it off by heart and all that stuff. But it's been newly updated with recent news story happenings, which maybe we might talk about later.
Yes, we might indeed.
Maybe. Cliffhanger. but I'm also doing a free show for 1 week on the Laughing Horse Free Fringe. And I'm doing that sort of happy hour, so which is an hour-long comedy show full of other guests. If you fancy coming along, that'd be lovely.
Yes, I'll be there.
Amanda
totally
will be free. There. If it's free, of course you'll be there. Of course. I'm anything that's free.
Yeah, totally free. Not slightly free. It's totally free.
It's totally free. Of course, I will cry if people don't donate at the end, but that's fine.
I'd like to see that, frankly. I'm always happy to see a performer cry.
Emotional bribery. Yeah, that's fine. Pay to have me cry. No, that doesn't make this back on track itself again. And I'm also performing with Abnormally Funny People in the evenings at Stand on the Square. So I'm doing kind of, my main show is Look at Me, and it's 6 days, and that's the Gilded Balloon, except that this year's Fringe is very strange because the Gilded Balloon space I'm performing at has now been relocated to the Pleasance Dome.
Okay, so that's like a crazy mashup, isn't it?
Yeah, there's lots of venues kind of having...
For those of you who don't know the Edinburgh Festival, the Gilded Balloon and the Pleasance, sworn enemies normally. Mm. Karen Corrin, the owner of the Gilded Balloon, and Anthony Alderson, who runs the Pleasance, can be seen dueling naked on top of Arthur's Seat. So
and they pay good money for that. Yeah.
They've come to some kind of detente then to allow you, specifically to allow Juliet Burton to do your show.
Just me, yeah. No, they seem to have done this very amicably. And really, the Pleasance Dome is quite close in Edinburgh Fringe terms to the Gilded Balloon. I mean, it could have been up Arthur's Seat or, you know, anywhere.
Do you know what? I once went to see a show which, you know, they say the Edinburgh Festival, and then you find you're out in Musselburgh on the coast suddenly, and you're going, well, how did that happen? How am I? In fact, I had a friend who was doing a show in Rosslyn Chapel, and I never made that. I was like, I'm sorry, it's too far.
You can't.
Trade's description, it's not the Edinburgh Festival if it's not within walking distance of the Brooks Bar in the Pleasance, which is a performer's bar that for many years I have been propping up the bar of that, and I demand that it's within spitting distance.
It works both ways, though, because when I lived up there, we knew exactly how far away from the city centre we needed to be able to still be within walking distance of everything, but be just outside the fringe-made madness kind of main zone. Yeah. So yeah, we lived just a little bit up way of Leith Walk. And
yeah,
I
see, Leith used
it.
To be safe, but no longer. No, we're all spreading out.
Like, it is. It's like London. It's kind of just spreading out. There's no greenbelt zone in Edinburgh anymore.
I know. I live in Zone 6 in London now, which, you know, that used to be all fields. I remember that was all fields, but no. Anyway, good. So we'll talk more about Edinburgh plans later on.
Awesome.
With the lovely Juliet and your glorious show, Look At Me.
Yeah.
And other things that you're doing. But we were going to deal with some of the news stories of the week. The first one, Kate Moss, or Kate Mess, as the tabloids dubbed her.
That's clever.
And it's very... They are clever.
I see what they did there.
They are very good at the punnings. And my... Kate Moss, I mean... This show is all about being positive about women and how brilliant women are, and I'm not going to deviate from that because Kate Moss and I, basically twins, both born in Croydon, roughly the same time, spiritual twins. Mm. I mean, our careers went in slightly different directions, but who knows?
She still takes EasyJet.
She still takes EasyJet, yeah. As do I when I can afford it. So, yes, she and I on the Megabus. But so the question is, Kate Moss, feminist icon... or old soak? And it's a question I've asked of myself very often as well.
Are those the only options?
Yes. So choose one.
Right. That's very black and white.
It is. No. The thing that I kind of found interesting about this story, and let's not pass judgment on Kate Moss because it's her life and she can do with it what she will, but I did find it interesting that all the female columnists, Grace Dent, the lovely, brilliant Grace Dent, and the brilliant Suzanne Moore, who both of whom I enjoy, both took to their columns to stick up for her and for the idea of women having fun in a slightly irresponsible way, which I, you know, and I kind of thought, yes, that's a valid position as far as I'm concerned. The idea that she's allowed to do what she wants.
So this is her on EasyJet, just to get me up to speed, because, you know, I don't read the newspapers that much.
So she was on an EasyJet flight coming back from Turkey. She'd been with Sadie Frost and others, having a detox.
As you do, right?
And what's the first thing you do when you leave a detox?
Drink.
Yeah. So that's what she's
that's
done.
The rules.
She's broken out of the detox and has... But, I mean, it is difficult because she was a bit of a dick. I mean, let's not pull punches here. She was being a bit of a dick.
Why was she a dick?
She called the pilot a basic bitch, which is not a form of abuse I've ever encountered. A basic bitch.
It's like you're so basic as a human being, basically.
Oh, that's not basically.
Basically, she's basic.
But does she go into the cockpit and say that to their face, or is she just sitting there?
I don't know, because you're not really allowed into the cockpit.
No.
Even on EasyJet, they frown on it, don't they?
I mean, that might have been like distracting for the pilot if she'd done that. But if she was just sitting in the back and kind of going, oh, well, you know, grumbling away.
Well, she'd cracked open her own booze, which, again, they don't like that. They don't like it when you do that on a plane.
No, because they can overcharge you for all the booze they can sell.
Well, and they'd run out of food, and that had angered her. And again, as someone who suffers from low blood sugar, I mean, I'm tetchy if I don't get anything to eat.
I
and if you pile some vodka on top of that, I'm going to go.
I'm not surprised, because it's quite nice actually to be reassured that Kate Moss eats. That's a good thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, look at the glorious Juliet Burton finding the positive in that story. There
I
we
love
go.
The fact that glorious is my new word. Right, I'm going to rename us the great Gonzo, the glorious Juliet
Burton. That's what you are. But the Suzanne Moore's article, she sort of recaps on things that men have done on planes that are worse, some of which I didn't know. Former Stonerazor singer Ian Brown threatened to cut off an air steward's hands and banged on the flight deck door. He went to prison. He went to prison for that.
Did he?
As you might expect.
Wow.
REM's Peter Buck, who attempted to play a CD on the hostess trolley.
That's right, yes.
Sorry, but that's exactly the kind of thing I do. Does this play CDs? What? Sat next to a passenger and insisted she was his wife. She wasn't. Raided bottles from the galley after he'd been told he couldn't have any more booze and threw yoghurt over everyone. Again, I mean, I know these are terrible things to do, but we're sort of enjoying.
Oh, are we just focusing on the celebrities? Because I'd love to know what outrageous things just anyone has done.
Yeah.
Ever.
Well, probably not as good as Conrad Hilton, brother of Paris, who recently locked himself in the loo to smoke marijuana and then went round screaming, and we can swear on FUBAR, so be warned, swear's coming up. He went round screaming, "I will fucking own anyone on this flight. They are fucking peasants." I think calling someone a basic bitch pales into insignificance.
Was that on Ryanair, EasyJet?
I mean, you would think Conrad Hilton would be flying on his own plane, which would make it even more tragic.
He probably does own everyone on that plane.
Yeah, they are my staff.
Legally, yeah.
And Gerard Depardieu, who weed all over the carpet and delayed a plane for 2 hours.
Oh, but it's Gerard Depardieu.
Oh, I don't know. No, I've gone right off
no,
him.
No, you have, right.
Oh,
okay.
Right off him. He's a Russian citizen now, for tax reasons.
Interesting. Really? I didn't know
Imagine
that.
Imagine being so reluctant to pay tax that you're prepared to become a Russian citizen. Extraordinary.
Well, there was that guy who I found out that it was cheaper to change his name by deed poll than to change his... was it EasyJet or Ryanair?
Ryanair
booking, yeah. Which I thought was very clever of him. It was ingenious. I think he named it something like after a Batman character. It was very good. Very good indeed.
Very good. I got booked onto a flight once. I was comparing a gig in the Far East. And,
how very glamorous.
I know. I just thought I'd drop that in with a sort of...
and are you available for more comparing gigs in the Far East?
I am very much willing to travel. EasyJet, Ryanair, whatever it may be. But because I was the MC of the gig, they'd put on my plane ticket, MC Lucy Porter. And so I turned up at the checking desk and they went, oh no, sorry, you're down as MC Lucy Porter. And I thought, well, this is brilliant. I'm now a rapper.
Well, amazing.
I'm now a sort of 90s, like the Rebel MC.
I think that's quite a feminist stance. You know, instead of Ms. Mrs. It's not Miss anymore. It's just MC.
That's a brilliant, yes, that's what I'm going to demand on all my checkbooks. And do they still do checkbooks?
I think some people do. Yeah. I think my dad still has one.
I'm going to get a checkbook.
I still have them. They're just rotting away and like they're becoming like fertiliser in the back of my drawer. You see, up until these news stories, I had thought that the coolest, in inverted commas, the most entertaining thing that you could do on a plane was the Mile High Club, which I've heard of. I've never done.
No. Uncomfortable and insanitary as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, I've always found that. Like, I've always thought of the idea, not since I was a child, but whenever I've considered that as an option of sexy things to do, like, no, it doesn't sound sexy at all. It sounds very cramped and very, very just smelly and horrible. Or at least that's the way I do it.
And you might get sucked out of the... I always fear the flush.
Yes. I don't like to go to the bathroom on a plane during the flight. Just when they're landed, it's fine, because then you know what's happening.
Anyway, the worst is you'll be sucked onto the tarmac.
Yeah.
And actually arrive quicker than you would have done if you disembarked through the forward or rear doors.
I mean, let's face it, I have gotten drunk on a plane before. Mm. Like, that's fun. I've gotten drunk in an air terminal before, like, before you get on the plane. I mean, Wetherspoons opens at 4 a.m.
Yeah, the Wetherspoons in Glasgow Airport is the only thing there is to do in Glasgow Airport. Yeah. There is nothing else. It's like they're
same
inviting
with
you to
Edinburgh. It's such a tiny little place that you just, you know, just that's what you do. And there's other people as businessmen who are about to go off on flights to go have a meeting in London, and you're like, if they're getting drunk, why not?
Exactly. Yeah. It's fair game for all of us.
Yeah,
and the altitude makes it take effect more quickly as well. So it's not Kate Moss's fault.
Apparently other passengers have said that she wasn't actually so bad.
She was just having a laugh.
That she was actually quite funny, and it's amazing publicity for EasyJet, isn't it? That Kate Moss.
Do you think they're making a bigger deal out of this?
There was no, you know, she might have been escorted by the police when she arrived, but nothing. There was no charges, nothing was
said. It
did
give almost every other columnist the chance to do the really shocking thing about this is that Kate Moss flies on EasyJet. No one's made that point before.
And then I prefer EasyJet to other. EasyJet's not bad. EasyJet's they're quite friendly. They're quite happy.
I mean, I've done a megabus back from Scotland,
goodness.
So I'm not in any position to complain.
I've done that, and it was
the cramp
in your legs. It's just
and it's just that sense, because I thought, it's going to be trouble, because other people had said, they're quite rowdy, but it was just the absolute misery of everybody on that bus. It's like all of us were going, our life choices have brought us to this.
Mistake did I make?
Why did I not try harder at school?
Have you seen those Megabus Golds? Or something like that. It's like a Megabus. It's like you have to pay extra to have the good Megabus, but all they have is blacked out windows. So nobody who doesn't pay, nobody knows what it's like in there until you pay. It might be even worse. Or it might have jacuzzis and free money and everything. Yeah. And I don't know, strippers and gigolos. You just don't know.
And that's what I look for very much on a long journey. I'm like, bring on the strippers. That'll take my mind off it. So, Kate Moss, good, fair play to her. I mean,
I've always been a bit of a fan of Kate Moss, and I'm not really quite sure why. But I don't know, she's always been somebody that I've admired in a way that she doesn't really care
Yeah, well, I think that is that's the thrust of what most people admire about her, is that she can be a bit of a dick, but, you know,
yeah.
She takes no prisoners. She doesn't, but she's not, like, also Naomi Campbell always makes her look quite good, because Naomi Campbell is clearly just sort of quite scary. So Kate Moss, well, she's not that bad. Comparatively, she's all right, as South London supermodels go.
But yeah, even Naomi Campbell, she said lots of very strong feminist kind of, you know, being entrepreneurs and encouraging female empowerment. She does do that as well as being a bit, well, we're all a bit off the wall sometimes.
Yes, yes. But on the one hand, you're a strong feminist role model. On the other hand, you take blood diamonds from from dictators.
Yep.
It's a difficult path to travel.
Yeah.
But good, yeah. Well, I think we've dealt with that. I think that's
done.
Good.
You think we've solved it?
Scratching that off the running order.
Kate Moss, good thing. tick. That's good. I need to start our list as well for. We do a list every week, Juliet.
Oh, do you?
Some of them more successful than others, I'll be honest. The one that is continuing to give us the most joy in terms of people tweeting and emailing is still a very early one we did, which was, the question was, can you name things that are unequivocally better about being a woman?
Oh.
Now, and feel free to ponder that. Mm. The overwhelming response that we got, the number one thing, was that women's toilets tend to be nicer than men's toilets.
Yeah, yeah.
But since we came to that conclusion, and it was slightly depressing to think, oh, that's the best we can hope for, that our toilets are less rank and disgusting. But even that small victory is being chipped away at week by week, because people keep sending me pictures and details of really nice men's toilets. Because the Philharmonic pub in Liverpool, I kicked it off again. The men's toilet, the urinals there, stunning. We had someone from a garden centre the other week doing the beautiful, beautiful garden centre urinals. And this week, Jeremy emailed to say that the Princess Louise pub in London's Holborn, it's near Holborn Tube Station.
Oh,
and
I was there today.
You could have treated yourself.
I could have gone.
To a view of the men's toilets. I've been into that pub a lot of times, and the women's toilets are, okay, you know, nothing to write home about. The men's toilets, apparently palatial, Victorian, original marble surrounds, gorgeous architecturally in terms of design. So that's something for the gentlemen and adventurous ladies like me who don't mind going in and having a look. That's another one for you to look out for. So that was nice of Jeremy to alert us to that. So basically, we're gradually coming to discover that actually men's toilets are ace.
I do like a good toilet. I think you can judge a restaurant, not by the food, by the toilets, really. Mm. That's where you can get all the free hand cream and the free hand lotions.
Love a Molton Brown. I would never buy it myself, but I very much enjoy it if it's free.
I never use hand cream unless it's in a toilet. That's when I start looking after my skin on my hands. Interesting. It's not interesting, possibly, but I don't know. It depends on your level of interest. I recently, this week, a couple of days ago, I don't ask me why, but I started Googling portaloos, posh portaloos.
Oh, yeah.
Like, for the luxury...
You're not getting married, are you?
I'm not getting married, no, but I'm going to quite a lot of weddings that are outdoors. And I started thinking, being a toilet...
aficionado?
Word? Yeah, I was going to go for aficionado.
Enthusiast.
None of these words sound
fan. Big fan of toilets, Juliet. I'm a big glorious Juliet.
Big fan of good luxury toilets, yeah. Right? And I was just preparing myself, like, what are we in for here? Like, some of these people are, they have some money.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering whether they're going to push that money on the portaloos.
I think if you're going to do a wedding outdoors, that's, you've got to spend your money there, haven't you?
Have you been to festivals? You've been to music festivals? Yeah. So yeah, that portaloos there. Awful, horrific. I have been to a wedding once where they had they had potpourri, and they had like maple wood, everything made out of maple, and it was like soft toilet roll, soft lighting as well to make you look beautiful.
Good deodorising.
Absolutely. Smelt delicious in there. And in fact, it was a lot nicer than the rest of the wedding. So,
yes. You've spent most of a wedding enjoying the toilet facilities, then you know that's a relationship that's going to last.
Yeah.
They've got their priorities right.
Yeah.
That's very good. You want to see the toilets on a Megabus Gold.
And the gigolo's in there helping you wipe your hands.
Exactly. That's it. Full service in the Megabus Gold toilets. The toilet, I'm sure the toilet issue will rumble on. But hopefully. I'm going to start a new list for today, which is, and this is kind of relating to things that I suspect we're going to talk about imminently, Juliet. It's about body shaming, because I had an incident this week which I wish to share with you. I was on my way to yoga. And I was taking the bus to, you know, not a mega bus girl, just a regular bus. And I was at the bus stop and I was wearing my gym clothes and I was carrying a rolled up yoga mat. And a man was next to me at the bus stop and he looked at me and sort of looked me up and down. And he said, "Oh, you going to the gym?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Oh, good." And I was at a loss for words at that point. And I didn't know. I was like, have I been body shamed or was that just very awkward small talk? And I couldn't. But then the bus arrived and it was all, you know, I was distracted. He wasn't getting on the same bus. So, but it was one of those moments that it did make me kind of go, oh, I don't like being judged. And I just wondered if readers,
if you want to read. Read the radio.
readers of this radio programme. If anyone had, because it called to mind for me other sort of incidents though, and I think to be fair to this man, I was feeling a bit sensitive because I'd just taken my laptop in to be repaired, and when the man was writing down, you know, they sort of write down what condition your laptop's in so that you know it's the same when you get it back, and he was writing it down, he went, "Oh, okay, so I'm going to put black marks on the top and bottom, scratching on the casing and covered in dust." I didn't expect to sort of, you know, the cleanliness of my laptop to be judged. I was more hoping that it would be a technical thing, so I think I was a bit sort of on edge. I was feeling a little bit paranoid.
So
anyway.
Your laptop had been shamed for its appearance.
It had been dirt shamed.
Yeah.
And then I felt I was being body shamed. But I also remembered when I was 16 years old, on my 16th birthday, a friend of my mother's for my 16th birthday presented me with a Thighmaster.
What?
For those of you who don't remember the Thighmaster, it was one of those things they advertised on television. It was like a big spring that you, I'm
clamp
doing it now.
That's it's like, the sound it's like an thigh. Accordion for the thighs.
It is. Yeah. And that was my 16th birthday present from one of my mum's friends. And I just thought, is there, for the listeners out there, are there times where you have felt, and this clearly men and women can join in on this, because I think it's, for women it's normally you feel you're being shamed for being fat. I think for men often it is being skinny. You know, that's a thing that they get a lot of stick for, and I just wondered if people had experience of that, really.
I'm sure they do.
I'm bloody sure they do. So it's at FooBar, you can tweet us.
I'm tweeting it right now.
You can email us in various ways. A lot of people email via my website, which is quite nice, lucyporter.co.uk. I get quite a lot of people doing that.
How very modern people are.
I know, they just find you, whether you want them to or not, because we never really give out. I always forget to give out the details of how to get in touch, but people do find you, which is nice and also scary. But shall we, let's leave that list to be pondered, and we'll have another track.
I have a lot that already springing to mind, yes. So I can definitely offer.
Excellent. Well, we'll fortify ourselves with some Revels. And gin.
And we'll be welcoming a second guest as well after this track
fabulous.
As well.
Oh, well, good. Well, what are we going to play then?
Well, I think we're going to play something that's tenuously linked to the Kate Moss story.
Okay,
here we go.
What have you done, Amanda? You're very clever. She's like a tabloid sub-editor.
Okay, so Missy Elliott, it's called She's a Bitch, but we're renaming it today She's a Basic Bitch.
Very good, Amanda.
Okay, so
well
here
done.
We
you
go.
Earned your money.
Thank you.
The Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR Radio.
Oh, God, every time that sting makes me go a little bit funny.
It stings you.
It stings me. I go, oh, don't say my name. There's no need. There's no need for that. That's just showing off. Anyway, yes, the Lucy Porter Show with the glorious Juliet Burton. And now let's think of an adjective that can describe our latest guest.
Radiant.
We brought in, and we have, yeah, radiant's very good.
Oh, that's nice. Radiant.
Yeah, because also there's an alliterative quality to that. It's the radiant Ruth Bratt.
Oh, woo! Thanks very much.
You are radiant, as always. Radiant. And we had Lucy Trodd, your double act partner
yeah.
in crime, a couple
yeah.
of weeks ago.
She said to bring snacks.
Yeah, and did you?
I did, but I tried them outside. They're horrible.
Oh.
I did that thing where you go, oh, quick, buy a snack. And I got... I mean, you know, I should have known these would be awful. Freeze-dried carrots.
Freeze-dried carrots?
Yeah. It's kind of like... Yeah, I thought it would be like crisps. It's not. it's just like dry
it's
carrot.
Space food. That's yeah. what you brought. If we were on a mission.
I mean, I can bring them in, but I don't think
I think we should. Yeah, we'll get those. Okay. During the next song, we'll bring those in.
Get them.
But it's lovely to see you anyway.
Lovely to see you too.
To have you. And since Ruth came into the studio, we've done nothing but talk about toilets.
Yeah.
We've very much set the agenda yet again for this show. We're going entirely below the waistline. Yes, body shaming was our topic of the week. Given that, I'll just recap for Ruth and anyone who wasn't listening. I got body shamed. Someone made a comment on my physique at the bus stop that I felt was saying I was out of shape.
It's always nice, isn't it? Yeah. Was he in shape?
I like that you assumed he was a he.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, women do it, but they tend to do it more slyly. They wouldn't actually say it to your face. You know, they do it after you'd gone.
Well, they get a job on a magazine where they can do nothing but that all day.
Just put big red circles around you, around your whole body.
It's what I was looking today at in the supermarket. There was a magazine, and it was Lorraine Kelly back in her bikini at 55. See how she did it inside. And you know, you get to the point where you go, well, it's just diet and exercise, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think I really need
or
to.
Or how did she
inside.
Get into a bikini? She put her legs through the holes for the leg holes. And
did she do it up before she put it over the boobs?
Yes.
Or did she spin
it
round?
It's a clip fastening.
Yeah. Or it's one of those tie ones. I find them very hard. Hold tonight.
They are hard because you always do it a little bit too tight and then you've kind of got that weird that weird stoop and the strange
and really
bit of underboob.
Yeah, but it does give you a bit of an uplift, the boobage. So, yeah.
Yeah, hoist them up, but what cost to your neck?
Yeah.
And can you swim in it? Because ultimately, all bikinis are swimming garments. So if they don't function as swimming garments, what's the point?
I know. I will. Yes, I also catch my hair in the halter neck.
Oh, yeah.
Ouch.
Oh, that hair. You can't swim like that.
No.
But so with body image rather than bikini mishaps, but I was going, it sort of... It, leads us, if you would like to talk about it, Juliet, into recent events in your life.
Yes.
Where you encountered the biggest dick on the planet.
I mean, I haven't seen his package, but so basically, in case anyone listening doesn't know me, which is probably a lot of people, I've been a size 4 and a size 20 and everything in between due to eating disorders. So I've struggled with anorexia. I was sectioned for anorexia when I was a teenager and been in and out of hospital lots of times. I'm still in therapy, but I've been on an ongoing journey of recovery for many years now, so over 10 years. It's an ongoing journey. Every day's a new battle, a new choice to choose recovery over my illness, and sometimes it's harder than others. Now, that became harder than I'd ever experienced before in the last couple of months, when there was this infamous news story that hit the headlines about this bright yellow bikini advert. I'm not going to mention the company's name, if that's okay.
Yes, no, I've forgotten.
Just
because so that's good.
I'd forgotten it as well. I know what the picture is, but I'd forgotten who it's for.
And every time I write an article,
which is
this
good,
now,
I'm glad.
Yeah, and also makes it show what a rubbish advert it was.
Oh, thank you. Well, every time I write an article now, they keep bringing up that same image. I'm like, no, there's loads of other images out there. Anyway, it's not my choice. I'm still glad to have a voice. Basically, I signed a petition against the advert because for me, like, having grown up with, like we all have, we've grown up with those images, it's a daily irritant, it's a background noise that has bled into our subconscious to tell us instinctively we are not good enough the way we are, buy our product because then you will be good enough, you will be acceptable. And I was sick to the back teeth of it, as many thousands, hundreds of thousands of not just women, but men as well are. And many, many people signed this petition. I was just one of them. But I was the one that the company replied to my automatically generated tweet about signing this petition. I didn't go out to attack the company. I just tweeted saying, I signed this petition because I felt like I wasn't good enough. Hashtag perfectly imperfect. And they replied saying, why make your insecurities our problem? Winky emoji. And I thought, well, I'm a strong woman. I've got a voice. They asked me a question. I'm going to answer it. We can swear, can't we?
Mm. Oh, yes.
I'm
going to
fucking well answer it.
fucking well done you.
Fucking good job.
Thank you. I hope so. Anyway, because I have thought about maybe I've helped them make money, but we'll come into that in a second. I replied saying, well, because your adverts help add to the external voices telling young girls that they're not good enough. Now, the show that I am doing next week in London and in Edinburgh, and it's on tour, It's a show about body confidence. It's a show that I've done lots of research into to explore the fact that we all have those internal voices that inside our own heads that kind of tell us, you know, occasionally, you know, you're not good enough, you know, you should really get to the gym, or you shouldn't really wear that, or you shouldn't really eat that, or, oh God, you're really rubbish at that, aren't you? And we have a choice to either buy into that or not. And these adverts and these magazines and these images that we're constantly bombarded with can add to those, exacerbate those problems, I feel. Anyway, this company eventually continued and said, replied to me again saying, and it's okay to be fat and out of shape. We are a nation of sympathisers for fatties. Hashtag doesn't help anyone. Now, the fact that they chose to use the word fatties, that implies that they're not about health. They are about body image and about bullying. Like if they said the word obesity, even if they had spoken about obesity, you can still be very physically fit and be obese. So I was rather shocked by their conduct. It got even worse when the CEO started making fun of my mental health problems online.
It's nice
as
to
well.
Bring mental health into it, isn't
it?
When
always
you
think
when
it
you upset people in one way, why not just try? I'll try
just go the whole hog,
see if I can upset them in another way.
Well, I had thought that the grown-up thing to do would be to just be open with them and say, look, I've experienced all these problems. I would love to come in and discuss with you why I feel like these adverts add to these problems. And after a couple of other people stood up for me saying, you know, do you think this conduct is acceptable? First you body shame and then you mental health shame. The CEO ended up going, oh, so Juliette Burton does have mental health problems then. Laughing emoji, okay emoji, and alien face emoji.
He really needs to get a grip on his emojis as much as
Maybe they just need like a new marketing manager, because he seems like he should not be allowed to use Twitter.
That's the CEO. The marketing manager has continued. He said about they've released the advert in New York now, and the head of global marketing has said it's a big middle finger to all of the people who opposed it in London.
Wow.
Which I think they're just trying to do this whole let's cause a big ruckus and let's be massive dickwads to everybody. And I don't understand it, because to me, I think that we're all at a point now where we want to have everyone respecting each other and maybe fighting for equal rights for everybody to be equally treated and respected. And I just can't understand why this company would want to publicly encourage that kind of behaviour. But it all feeds into my show, so there you go.
Yes, well, and it's basically the no one comes out looking as bad from that as the winky emoji dickwad.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're not giving that company any more publicity, and I'm glad that you are turning it into a positive.
I think it's important because we are all amazing. Like, our bodies are incredible. Your body, everyone in the studio, our bodies.
Mine is bloody
your blood,
amazing.
Your body
mine's
is
so
incredible.
Fantastic. I look at it daily and go, "Oh, look at that!"
Honestly, I know that we all make fun of it, but our bodies are breathing. They are dreaming. They are seeing. They are blinking. They are processing food, which we're not going to focus on. But toilets are great. they are surviving no matter what we put them through. You know, people who have severe limb disfigurement or facial disfigurement, we all need to embrace the fact that we are alive, and our bodies are doing a remarkable job of keeping us alive. And why aren't we enjoying life and being grateful for that?
Well, and also the different bodies do different things. I was talking to a friend of mine who recently was diagnosed with diabetes, and he kind of knew he was going to get it at some point because it runs in the family, but he's got quite young just because, you know, he didn't perhaps look after his body as much as he should have done, and he feels bad, and you know, and he's lost tons of weight since going on this diet for it and everything. But the weird thing is, because everyone goes, well, if you've got, you know, if you're overweight, you've got terrible cholesterol problems and you've got terrible this, that and the other. And he hasn't. He's got the lowest cholesterol and always has had, even, you know, whatever size he was, he's always had really low cholesterol. And then, you know, some people say, oh, if you go exercising, then you'll feel better and you'll feel... Do you know what? I have never felt better from exercising. And it's not for lack of trying. I really went for it. I was like, right, I'm going to go 3 times a week and I'm going to get a personal trainer and I'm going to learn to love exercise. And after 6 months, I still hated exercise. And I was like, my body doesn't react the same way.
No.
And when I've been thin, it's because I've been miserable.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are the only times
totally
I've been skinny is
and
when I've been like, oh, God.
And people say, oh, God, that's amazing. You know, you look brilliant. It's I'm dying inside because my life is a mess.
When I look back at photographs, with the ones that I remember feeling happy, those are the ones that I look back and go, oh, that's a brilliant memory, rather than the ones where I felt thin or whatever. I wondered whether your body shaming experience was about, like, that man saying, oh, good that you're going to the gym, because maybe he knows that you're going to have endorphins released and yes. you're going to feel a bit happier. Yes. And maybe, I
let's
don't know.
Hope that let's that's hope the that's case. I'm going to say that that is what he meant, because yeah. I do. I am a big fan of exercise because I do get that do ridiculous get kind of jogger's high. Or I mean, I'm in yoga and I'm all very blissful and at peace and all lovely, all very,
very
nice.
Balanced.
But I the one thing I find getting older is that I just wish I could, and I know every woman says this, you wish you could tell your 16, 18, 25 year old self, just please enjoy the body you've got, because yeah. it's amazing. And aesthetically, it's really not as bad as you think it is. And physically and functionally, it is brilliant. And, you know, look after your joints, because when your knees go, it's no fun at all.
That's what I love doing the show about, it, because then I get these young girls coming up to me afterwards and saying it has informed them and made them, like, and it's changed their perspective, which is awesome, because I don't want them to go through what I went through when I was younger. And plus, one of my favourite facts is that, did you know that smiling actually boosts your immune system?
Yes. And did you know you can make yourself smile? You can, this is a bit, I mean, you know, you can just by smiling, right? But I was doing this the other day, because when you're improvising, sometimes, you know, you have like a scrunchy face, and that means you don't enjoy what you're doing. And if you just smile, you make yourself feel happy and everything feels a bit better, and it does actually work. I tried it for like a month, like, well, I'm just gonna smile all the time. I mean, it is a bit weird, but but you do start to enjoy stuff a lot more. Put a pencil in your mouth and then it gives you the smile thing and then that raises it. I don't know why, but it works.
I love the days when if you've ever gone like on your commute and you just actively one day just choose to smile at everyone and make eye contact and smile. And just smile. And it's just, it's like maybe 50% of them think that you're a nutter. But that's fine, because I am one. So that's okay.
It's quite enjoyable, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, and then the other 50% might smile back. Mm. And then you've started their day off with a lovely smile.
It's very nice when someone's being very aggressive towards you to smile and be. Totally. Yes, I've had a couple of road rage incidents recently, because I'm a very bad driver, I'll be honest. It was totally my fault. And this man was absolutely furious with me. And I said, oh God, I'm really sorry, you're right. Totally my fault. And and obviously, I mean, I don't think I cheered him up, but the level of stress that I felt in dealing with that situation was certainly diminished.
Certainly with the with this body, beach body ready thing, that, and it was unleashed lots of trolls online as well. One of my staples in my life is that attitude of, do you know what, just be kind, be nice. Because it's not, if I react with anger, that's only going to hurt me, and it's going to fuel them.
They'll
love it. So I'm just going to try my best to see their point of view as much as I can, but also try to offer an alternative. Which sounds so boringly PC, but cause some of them actually did come around to thinking about it in a different way, and that was really rewarding.
Yeah.
I do like that idea, but I had a woman who after mine and Lucy's show went out, went out of her way to find me on Facebook. It's really hard to find me on Facebook because of my privacy settings, but she went out of her way to find me and then send me a message to say how much she hated the show, which I thought was, you know, nice. And I said, oh, that's nice of you, thanks for finding me to tell me that, your feedback's really appreciated, pretty much that. And she then sent me another email to tell me that that I obviously had some real problems, because as Machiavelli says, and then proceeded to quote Machiavelli at me.
Wow.
About
that's
liking
and, happy individuals.
But liking to be flattered. And I sort of went, oh, this is horrible, and I was really miserable. And so my fellow went, all right, and then spent about half an hour on Facebook, because she then blocked me from finding her. And I was like, wow, that's really impressive. Cool. So he went on Facebook and found her, and then spent half an hour just being mean about her to me, which made me really happy, going, oh, all of her and her husband, oh dear, their friends aren't very nice. Oh, yeah. Literally.
A bit of meanness
and, oh, it just made me feel
content.
So much better. They favorite. Like chess, Ruth.
Oh, that's great. My favourite Frankie Boyle's thing of one of his tweets, which was, you know, anyone, I'm paraphrasing, he put it perfectly, but it was, you know, anyone can be a troll on Twitter, but fair play to the people who do it on Facebook, where you can see they've got a shit kitchen and their kids are ugly. And I know, we shouldn't be mean about people, but then if they've been...
But
I mean,
see, but the difference
home,
is, yeah, I will do it in my own home, or in this case, in our hotel room, because we were on tour when they did it. And I'm like, you don't even have your own house to be happy in. But I'll do it there, but I don't understand the people who... who go out of their way to argue with or be mean to total strangers just because they disagree with them. Like, I don't like arguments face to face with anyone, and then to, you know, or not face any kind of argument. I don't like them. I hate them. And any kind of meanness, and you go, but you've gone out of your way to find someone on Twitter or Facebook just to be horrible.
You have a little symbol next to your Twitter or Instagram or whatever that just says whether or not you enjoy conflict and confrontation.
Yeah.
And you know, then those people can find each other. They're a lovely thing for them to be able to spread their negativity and their misery with each other.
This whole thing was the last month. I've never really had trolling in the way. It started off with the feminazi and the just jealous and all of that stuff, and the SJWs, which, by the way, social justice warrior, you guys know that?
Oh, no.
Is that right? What you're meant to be? They're
well,
accusing
it's,
you of
it's an insult, apparently, but social, good thing, antisocial, bad thing, you know, justice, good thing, injustice, bad thing, and warrior, standing up for your beliefs, I think, good thing, and not standing up for your beliefs and being apathetic, not so much for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it's an insult. I had all of that, and then we also had the people who called me a crazy harpy. Why would anyone want to listen to somebody who's been sectioned? Why would anyone want to listen to somebody who's been crazy? Get off your ass or get some meds was an interesting one. It just woke me up to the fact that I thought we'd come so far in breaking mental health stigma, but there are so many people out there who not only don't understand but also still want to attack people. However, the flip side of that for me was that there were so many people using social media in a positive way, like reaching out to me, taking. You say that this woman on Facebook had taken time out of her life to actually track you down and then type out this message that was not, which was negative and bringing us down.
Yeah.
But there were so many people who'd taken time out of their lives to send me a positive message of support, and that I can't thank them enough for that. So, social media is not always a bad thing.
No. We quite like it. I'm intrigued, as well as our attitudes not having come that far, the fact the word harpy is still being used.
Oh, harpy.
That says a lot about it, doesn't it? I've been thinking about this recently, about how, because I just read a book about
suffragettes.
I read a whole book about suffragettes, and I was thinking about how women who, it's hard to be a woman, even still, a woman with a voice who says what she believes, because you're automatically somehow not, you're less of a woman somehow. You're a harpy.
Yeah, and
you're
their adjective. You're shrew.
Interestingly,
these awful
you're a
things.
Small woodland creature.
So I don't know if you guys know Natasha Devon. She's a wonderful feminist, a Twitter presence, and also runs the self-esteem team. Wonderful woman. But she made the very wry observation during this Twitter shitstorm. I can swear.
Yeah. you fucking well can. Come on, let's get them out there.
That a lot of people were accused of being fat in this debate. That's a polite way of putting it on Twitter about this adverse and the objection to it, and whether they were size 6, 16, 26, man or woman. But she said maybe the fact that people are using the word fat, maybe it just means woman with an opinion. Maybe it's just the fact that if you're called fat, take it as that you have a strong voice and somebody wants you to shut up.
Yes.
And you're not going to shut up.
Yeah, I find it really odd, the whole kind of, you know, that you're as a woman saying something, you are somehow more dangerous and more threatening than, do you know what I mean? Like, because the reaction to it, you just go, why is this so threatening to you?
Absolutely brilliant, Bell End today.
Have you seen I was totally interrupting, but I was so excited about the suffragette trailer.
Yes.
What were you going to talk about? Sorry.
No, I was going to talk about a Bell End, so let's talk about I just had another example of a terrible Bell End who was on Twitter today, but let's talk about the suffragette.
Oh, the Bell End on Twitter.
Oh, what a choice. The suffragette trailer looks amazing, doesn't it? Have you seen it?
I've not seen it. What is
it? Oh my god, it's a film coming out in October. Suffragette, you've seen it.
Yeah, I've seen the trailer, it looks amazing.
Oh, everyone was saying it made me cry. Meryl Streep.
Yes, I was trying to remember who.
Helena Bonham Carter, another person who's awesome, but it's just
Streep, Carter.
What about the men? Come on, what men are in it?
Yeah.
Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, something for the girls to look at.
I think a lot of people said that it's a very emotional trailer, and it's the first time ever that I've put a film release date in my calendar on my phone, so that it will alert me. Go to the cinema now.
Bruce read a book. You're seeing a film. I feel I'm being left behind here. I've done nothing.
You're listening to music on this station.
I'm listening to
very cultured of you.
Yes. Should we have another track? Actually,
yeah. Why not? Let's have one from the album, shall we?
What a smooth segue.
I know, well, just, you know, I always forget to play the music, and then we get to the end and I go, we haven't actually listened. It's meant to be a music show, any music at all. So we'll have another Blondie, another track from Paranoid Lines by Blondie. Let's see if I recognise this one as being on the album.
Well, hopefully. It's Pretty Baby.
Oh, yes. There we go. That definitely was from Parallel Lines. I'll give you that, Amanda. It was.
Thank you.
We'll talk more about Blondie, actually, in the second hour, and I will do my singing. That is coming up.
Woo-hoo.
Oh, yeah. But we're so fired up with our social justice warrior I can't leave it alone. In fact, because Ruth was saying you'd spotted another advert today, which...
Horrible. It's the one, again, I won't mention the name of the company. I don't even know what they do. That's the crazy thing. But it says we can... there's a picture of a very, very attractive lady in not very much clothing. And it says, amazing, right? We can't swap your wife for a Swedish model, but we can swap your money for krona or something. And I was just shocked. I was literally just, you know, when I don't even know what to say about it. And I took a picture of it because I was, you know, I think the woman sitting opposite me thought I was taking a sneaky picture of her. Look great. However, above your head, no. And I tweeted about it because I was like, well, maybe we could swap your ad campaign for one that's not stuck in the 80s, you know.
Nice.
But I am just, yes. I'm flabbergasted that these things still exist. Not that people, when you react to them and go, hey, this is bullshit, they then are dicks about it, because that's what people like often. But the fact that they're still there to be fought about in the first place, because I thought I was really sure
we'd kind of won these battles, didn't we? But
That's why we need to keep having a voice. Like I've written about this for Huffington Post and Standard Issue, and lots of other people have been writing about it online. And this is one of the good things, again, social media can be very shareable, these conversations, and give other people the voice that maybe they hadn't previously had. And we can say, no, we're not willing to stand for this. And this is bullying behaviour. And you know what? We're 50% of the population as women, and we don't want to be highly sexualised all the time. Maybe advertisers could be a bit more imaginative, make us feel, make us laugh, make us think, maybe stop going for sex sells, because it does. But
it does feel a bit dated. One of the ones that I have tweeted was I was doing a gig in Devon, and in the local paper there was an advert for replacement windows and doors, UPVC replacement windows and doors, and they had the doors and the windows, and then they'd, by the side of it, they'd chosen to illustrate it with a picture of a woman in kind of like very small cut off denim shorts and a little top, with her hand sort of down the back of her shorts, just looking a bit sexy.
Wiping her bum?
Yeah, kind of looking I've got a poo that I'm needing to hold in manually. Yeah. But and it was just such a weird... It is, when it's sort of like that, where you go, well, this... I don't think they're doing it as a sort of deliberately provocative kind of thing. It's just they... The managing director is still stuck in the 70s.
Yeah.
Put a pretty lady next to the window.
I just think it says something about the managing director's lack of sex life, if that's what they're going for.
Or maybe they just wanted to show that now she's got her UPVC windows and doors, her flat's much warmer, she can walk around in shorts. It's hot in here.
And if I need a poo, I'll just open my UPVC windows and no one will smell it. Glorious Juliet. I said the lovely Juliet. That's all
that
wrong.
That can be lovely and glorious.
Glorious.
Okay, just glorious.
Merely glorious. Okay, ideas.
I'm so sorry.
The glorious Juliet Burton is going to have to leave us before Pim's out, which is a source of...
I'm so sad.
You can take a can with you. I've got extra. It's fine. You're not going to go away empty-handed.
Hurrah.
But I'm keen, before you do go, to let people know where they can see you doing your social justice warrior hilarity.
The hilarity is the bit that I want to stress more. I think I'm at London Leicester Square Theatre.
I love that bloody theatre.
It's such a lovely place.
It's great.
I'm going to be there on Wednesday and Thursday next week, so the 17th and 18th of June.
It's got a lovely bar for anyone who's
does have a nice bar,
coming.
Doesn't
you
it?
Can, it's really it's got a nice vibe about it.
So yeah, it's a docu-comedy show, documentary mixed with comedy, all about whether appearances affect who we are. And yeah, it's much less social justice warrior. It's more like it's important stuff, but let's have a friggin' laugh about it, because if we can't laugh about all this stuff, then where are we, really?
Yes.
We have to laugh, because laughter will mean that we can progress quicker and easier, because it's absurd that we're still having to put up with all of this stuff.
I know.
Now, and I don't want to drag things back to the toilet, but I will.
Oh, do.
Because you, as part of the research for your show, had interesting toilet experiences.
I did. Thank you for remembering. I dressed, as I said earlier, using prosthetic makeup, being lots of different appearances. So I was an old lady for a day, a man wearing the hijab, dressing provocatively and wearing very sexy clothes and also being size 20 and also a wild card day where I dressed a bit like Lady Gaga. And on my my man day, I did have an ethical dilemma because I was having great fun being a man. I hadn't realised how much I wanted to be a man for a day until I had the opportunity. Because I could act like a complete dickhead. But I had a lot of fun. I also got a bit cocky. And I pushed it a little bit too far, and do come to see the show to see how much trouble I got myself into, because it's pretty...
Kate Moss level of...
It's worse than that. Much worse. It involves... involves ex-boyfriends and it involves Savile Row. So anyway,
thank God you put the row on that.
But I did have the ethical dilemma on that day of which toilet to go into. Do I go into the ladies or the men's? And I did go into the men's because I was dressed as a man. I was being a man for the day. It's disgusting in there. It's, I don't know what they do, but it was absolutely.
They piss everywhere. That's what they do. They piss everywhere.
I think it's more than piss. But it did also raise another serious issue, which is how dangerous and serious that particular choice is for transgender people as well. A whole new area to discuss. If only I didn't have to squash it all into an hour-long show, because we could just be there for days talking about it all.
Well, you can expand it. You can.
I would love to.
Yes.
Yeah. Do the director's cut.
Theatrical run.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not a whole week of shows?
Well, are you on tour in the autumn?
I would love to be. Yeah. I think we're waiting to book up the dates, but definitely going to be on tour over the summer. If people want to go to my Twitter, at Juliet Burton, Juliet with two T's and an E, because you know I like to give people a challenge.
Fancy.
And French. Also, yeah, French, you know, yeah, put a little bit of sexiness and then put Burton at the end. And www.juliette.burton.co.uk as well, Burton. If anyone wants to have a look at that as well.
Burton. Juliet Burton.
Juliet Burton.
I like the fact what you've done there is as well, you've brought us back from, I was slightly despairing, thinking, is the toilet situation really not as good for women as we had hoped, but you've resolved that very nicely. That actually, no, it is definitively, absolutely, unequivocally better to be a woman in terms of the toilet, which is marvellous news. I will hopefully come and see you in the Edinburgh Festival.
I would love you to
Edinburgh Festival.
Do come. I shall give you VIP seats, but everyone has a VIP at my shows.
A seat. I will give you a seat. Well, that's nice to know. Good. Well, in fact, sometimes you have to stand, so that is. Yeah. Well, it's been glorious, hasn't it, Amanda?
You've all been glorious.
We cannot thank you enough for coming. Indeed. Would you care for... You actually got a choice, because there were more than one...
Oh, my goodness.
I got a choice of boozes. You can have Pimm's, you can have Gordon's... maybe I shouldn't say brand names, but you can have a Gordon's Gin and Tonic or a Captain Morgan's Spiced Gold.
I think I'll go for the standard Pimm's, please.
Standard Pimm's. Yeah. I'm now looking at the Captain Morgan. I've never seen one of these before. Oh, he's a dashing chap.
He is. But I feel like that's going to be your pin-up for the rest of the
evening. Do you know what? I'm just going to look at that. I'm just going to stick that where I can see it. That's going to be my eye candy.
It's sunny outside. I'm going to go for the Wimbledon style. Wimbledon's starting soon as well. Oh, it's too much to talk about.
I know. Well, we could, in Wimbledon fortnight, you can come back on.
I would love that. Should we have a little tennis match?
Why not? Claire Balding is going to be doing Wimbledon coverage.
Yes.
Did you know?
doing Wimbledon?
Venus and Serena and Claire. She was an unlikely outside bet, but I'll have a punt. I'll have a flutter on that. There's your film.
Thank you so much, my lovely. Lovely to be here.
Well, and good luck with all Leicester Square Theatre next week. Juliet Burton. Burton.co.uk. Is where we can find you.
Thank
lovely.
You so
shall
much.
We have a track?
And we'll have a little track.
And then we'll move Ruth into the hot seat.
You're giving away our secrets.
Yeah,
now,
we were all sort of shifting around in the studio.
It's musical chairs, basically. Yeah. That's what it is.
Good. And in fact, Amanda, you bagged yourself the comfy chair.
This was already here. I didn't deliberately move it around.
But and guess who's bagged it?
Oh, yeah. Who's pressing the buttons?
All right, yeah, you are in charge. That's fair enough. What are we going to listen to now?
L7, Pretend We're Dead.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, this is going to lead us. You've done a sort of, inadvertently, I suspect, you've kind of back-reft what I was going to talk about next.
No, it's all planned.
Yeah,
pretty much. See, I own the chair.
The Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR Radio.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Oh, no, I mean, I very much enjoyed the L7. The oh, dear is I just... Ruth Bratt, the lovely Ruth Bratt, the raging Ruth Bratt, she came in with freeze-dried carrots, and I thought, I'll try one. What is the point of those?
I don't know.
That doesn't taste of anything.
It doesn't, but my favourite thing on it is on the back, it says ingredients, carrot, concentrated lemon juice, and then the allergy advice is it may contain milk.
Something you're not telling us. That lemon milk, yeah. And then you've got beetroot, which is a bit better.
Beetroot, which also may contain milk, even though it's just beetroot. The beetroot's all right.
Well, do you know, my sister is vegan, and I have been vegan at points, and it's everything may contain something. I mean, you know, you're never in the clear because they always go, like, someone might have sneezed near a cow. L7, the reason I said all this is this ties in, because I was going to talk about the bellend on Twitter, who I was going to mention before, was this guy, again, I can't remember his name, but then let's not give him the oxygen of publicity, but this man who had leapt onto the It's Just a Tampon hashtag on Twitter today.
Oh, I saw him.
And he was an absolute, oh my God, a pranny of the highest order, if I can use the word pranny. he had because there was a very, you know, well-meaning hashtag about it's just a tampon, and it was to promote. In fact, I should find the actual campaign because I've forgotten who it
was.
Is
it the taxing thing?
It was originally about getting sanitary protection for women who can't afford it in areas of the world where they Plan UK, which is a charity which works with children in 50 of the world's poorest countries, and it was basically them trying to promote a campaign where they get money to give sanitary protection to women in developing countries. So anyway, so it was quite, and celebrities were having pictures of themselves taken with tampons, and I mean, I'm not going to talk too much about menstruation because I did on a previous show, Ruth, I gave away a little bit too much about my menstrual.
It was just last week, I think.
Was it last week? Yeah, it was. Really, I said too much, and we don't want to go there.
We
again.
Don't need to.
But yes, and this poor, I say this poor man, but he got into a debate with someone about tax on tampons and said, it's not fair because there are taxes on things that only apply to men. And they said, well, like what? And his answer was trousers. I know what it's like, you know, when you're forced to think of something in the trousers.
Is there something? I mean, you know, there might be. Is there something that is only men get taxed on?
Well, razors, actually, we did again last week, I believe. We discussed this, the urban myth that razors aren't subject to tax, which they are. They're a VAT, rather.
But isn't it a lower VAT rate?
I don't think it is. No, I think razors. I think, you know, I mean, he had a very valid, not a very valid point, but he had a semi-valid point. That, because a lot of people do think a myth has sprung up that razors aren't subject to VAT, which they are, and tampons are only subject to about 5%. And there is an argument to be had there, but this basically wasn't the subject that we were talking about. You know, the whole thing was about sanitary protection for women who can't afford it.
It's another really good one for that I saw recently for. Collecting them for homeless shelters and for homeless women, and I can't believe I'd never thought of it, and I suddenly went, oh, that would just be the most awful thing. Yeah. Like,
because as any of us have known, if you're caught short,
oh, it's
a really horrible thing. What am I going to do?
Like, oh.
And it's
always when you're wearing white, isn't it?
It is.
Always when you're wearing white.
It's always when you're playing Wimbledon, like Claire Balding.
Yeah.
When you're Claire Balding at Wimbledon, it's always happening.
You know what's going to happen.
But yes, yeah, so in L7, the famous, because I was thinking, oh, L7, there's definitely a thing about a tampon there. And so I looked up, I've been looking up L7 on the Wikipedia, and you know, it's L7 and a bit about their background. And I really liked L7 because I remember they were sort of a grungy band who were around when I was sort of in my formative years, when I loved grungy women doing things. Danita Sparks, Susie Gardner, Jennifer Finch, and Dimitra Plakas. My eyes aren't so good. And I was like, I'm sure there was some controversy with them and a tampon. And in their Wikipedia page, there's a whole controversy section. And indeed, during their performance at the 1992 Reading Festival, the band experienced technical difficulties with their audio equipment and were forced to stall their set. The rowdy crowd grew restless and began throwing mud onto the stage. In protest, lead vocalist Danita Sparks removed her tampon on stage and threw it into the crowd, yelling, "Eat my used tampon, fuckers." And then Sparks has remained unapologetic about the incident.
I think if you're going to throw a used tampon, you're probably not going to ever apologise for that.
Really apologize.
No, you can't go back on that.
Going back on that one. I'm really sorry. I don't know what came over me. Spur of the moment.
It's not the kind of thing I'd usually do.
No, I would never do that.
Mary Berry did it on a Bake Off, apparently. It just happens. Women just sometimes you just get overtaken by it and you just go, oh God, I'm sorry, I don't know what I was.
What I was thinking. I was just walking down the street.
There were two other things under the controversy heading for L7. In 1992, Sparks caused controversy in Britain when she dropped her pants on live television, appearing nude from the waist down during an L7 performance on the UK variety programme The Word.
I'm surprised. Yes. I was probably watching that.
I know,
actually.
Well, that's because I thought, oh, she took her tampon out on The Word, but no, so I was obviously remembering that. I don't remember anything about her appearance there, but I think I did watch that. And in 1999, the band raffled a one-night stand with a Demetra Blackis at a London gig. Crazy ladies, crazy times. Yeah. So I've raffled off one-night stands with myself. No one's ever bought a ticket, so that's fine. But yeah, so L7, very good, very good. They really are. So, Ruth, let's move from tampons, toilets to...
Something else beginning with T.
Tits. Let's move up to tits.
Oh, tits.
Let's talk. Well, how are you? And
very
how are
well.
Things? And when Lucy came in, she was just about to go to Singapore.
That's right.
And did you also go on that trip to Singapore?
So
was it?
It was wonderful, actually. We both went to Singapore, and then she flew home, and we flew out to Hong Kong and did a second week in Hong Kong.
This was with Showstopper?
Showstopper, yeah. It was great.
The improvised music.
It was amazing. In Singapore, every show we did, like, because we do what the audience want us to do, right? That's the deal. The musicals.
Improv.
Yeah. we like to do what we want to do, and we make them say the thing we want to say. No.
Scripted improv is the way forward.
Well, we have, we have many, many conspiracy theories about us that abound.
Yes.
There's some brilliant ones. One is that it is all scripted. And we're like, do you know how hard that would be? Like,
yeah.
You know, that we've got like a pile of scripts that we've learned all of them. One is that we have a really shit, like, blue digital clock, you know, that costs like a tenner. Mm-hmm. And it's just a big blue clock. Not even that big, like A4 size. And we put it at the front of the stage so we know how long we've got.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. And when we were doing the radio show, someone said, yeah, well, you know that clock is, it's, you know what that blue thing is, because they obviously can't see the face of it.
Yes.
That's their auto cue. So, like, there's someone backstage furiously making it up. And we're all going, oh. And then the other
it's
one.
It's on a relay to someone in LA
going, oh, I've got it. And then the best one we've ever heard was that in Edinburgh, and this one is definitely true because the person who was saying it knew someone who actually worked for the extras agency and had done it, is that we pay extras to sit in the theatre and we pay them £50 a suggestion. And we went, wow, we're in the wrong side of it then. I'm going to sit in the audience and get... Because I was like, think about the economics of that. Like, that's crazy. Like, that would be really hard to do. But yeah, so we do all of those things.
The funny thing is when people, because I've had that conversation with people where they go, oh, you know, it's everything on telly is set up, it's all set up, it's all fixed.
Mm.
And then they always say, oh, but I tell you what, and I'm not going to name the show, but they'll say, but I tell you what, I love that show. And it's a panel show, and they go, I love that show because you can just tell everyone on it it's just sort of making it up as they go along. And you're like, no, you're completely the wrong way around.
Yep.
Completely
the
wrong way around there. The panel shows often, they're the ones where
heavily scripted.
Anyway.
Yeah, we get a lot of that. But it's always fun. I quite enjoy those. They're my favourite things when you get it. Because actually, that's quite a compliment. Someone saying, well, there's no way they made it up. You're like,
oh,
slick. But in Singapore, every single one was about Singapore. They wanted it to be about Singapore. Mm. And we were sort of like, oh, okay.
You better learn quickly about Singapore.
Yeah, so it was really fun, though. And there were such great audiences. And it's... Singapore's great. I know it's a dictatorship, right? Oh, no, not that many expats, actually. A few. But I kind of feel like I mean, you know, I don't want to offend anyone, but I kind of feel like everyone's kind of an expat in Singapore. Like, there is a... It does seem to be a place where lots of people come and go. So it's not... They're definitely not all Western expats. I don't know about other expats, but it was a real mixture, and a real mixture of ages as well. And, and it's such a great country. It's such a great country. And
yes, you can be shot for chewing gum. But
yeah, but, you know, just don't chew gum. Guys, it's really hard. Says that. Just don't break the rules. Like, everyone, I know it's kind of... You know when you go, I know it is a dictatorship, and it's a benign dictatorship, and I do know that that is wrong. But it is really nice to walk down the street and there's no litter. Mm. And it's really, you know, it was weird because during the week when we were there, we were like, oh, God, there's just no people. There's no people around. And it's just because everyone's at work. Yeah. Everyone's at work and they're all working, and then in the evening they come out. And so the only day we noticed how many people there were was on the Friday. It was Labour Day, so it was like a big public holiday. And there was suddenly like a shed load of people, and we were like, this is where all the people are.
You're all in your offices all the time.
See, you're all really busy.
Not like London, where we're sort of just hanging.
And there's not a homelessness problem, because if someone in your... There's a thing called a filial responsibility law, where if someone in your family falls on hard times, it is your legal responsibility to look after them. And if you let them out, if you let them become homeless, then you're legally and financially responsible, and you get fined for allowing someone in your family to. So, I mean, it's kind of, you know,
well, that's
it's
kind
pretty
of what
draconian.
They're trying to do over here by taking away housing benefits.
Yeah, exactly.
18 to 25 year olds.
But
so,
it's
you know.
Just kind of, I really loved it though. I did really love it. And then we went to Hong Kong, which
you're
is.
You're allowed to. I mean, I've been to sort of places where you go, oh, this is.
I mean, this is probably.
Well, South Africa. I mean, it's still a very iniquitous, terribly unequal system. But Table Mountain is very pretty. I will, I cannot deny that. So.
Well, and it's nice to be able to walk around at night. And again, as a woman, to be able to walk around at night on your own at 2 o'clock in the morning and have no worry about your safety or anything. I mean, just nothing, you know. Just
I'm only laughing because when I went to Singapore, I don't know if I should say this, but I'm going to. It was the people who ran the gig who were the ones that you were terrified of, because they were these sort of two very heavy drinking expats who always took all the boys who went over. They always took them to a brothel as a like a little treat for you guys. We'll take you to a brothel.
I didn't see any brothels.
Oh, yes.
Because in Hong Kong,
I tell you
what,
we'll go back.
Let's go back.
Let's go back, everyone. I'll show you. This would be a great travel documentary series where you go to places and really enjoy them, and then I take you back.
Let's look at the seamy underside.
You're not going to enjoy this.
Because Hong Kong, you see, is much more. And also, I suppose Singapore is easier. It's a much easier place to be. Everything's clean. Everything's accessible. Half of everything is in English, so you could go, oh, I know what street I'm on. And, and there is still that in Hong Kong, there is, but it's much more Chinese, obviously. So it's just that little bit more removed from what you're used to. So finding food that was edible was a lot harder.
Because
they eat everything, and that's brilliant. Mm. I tried chicken feet, but it just tastes like chicken feet. So, you know, you're eating going, well, there's a lot of bone, and that is just chicken.
It's
a chicken
foot. I'm eating a foot. That's what I'm doing.
And I couldn't quite get around that.
It's a very odd place to be when you're vegetarian, because you...
Yeah, there's
actually,
nothing.
Well, no, you actually, brilliantly, it's one of those places where you go, oh, I have the vegetarian option, and that is vegetables, and it's a kind of...
Yeah,
and
there is that. I mean, Pippa was... Last time we were in Hong Kong, Pippa Evans was vegan, and it was Hong Kong that turned her, because we ordered green beans like you do, and they came covered in pork. You have to be you just have to be careful of what you're ordering, and you know. But it's great. I really love Hong Kong.
It's very
as well.
Exciting that you get to do all this, because you know, it is. Doing English language comedy when I started, the last thing I thought I'd ever be doing would be going to Hong Kong and meeting men who enjoy prostitutes. I mean, I never never dreamed in my wildest dreams that would
be the place.
But it is now on improv, because I've never done improv and it terrifies me, as I think a lot of people who've never done it go.
Yeah.
But it is one of those things that when, like, we had Viv Groskop in the other week, and she has, started doing stand-up comedy, but also started doing improv. And I think improv, it's like a cult, that anyone who does it,
like
there's no going back. And why is it so addictive and amazing, and why do people kind of have the shiny-eyed enthusiasm when they talk about it?
There's a few things, I think. Like most things, most people come to it when they've, just broken up with someone, or, you know, they're at a changing point in their life, and it's the thing that gives them, you know, the freedom to do what they want to do. And I think it's kind of like, because we have long discussions about this and amongst the people I know who do improv, because everyone has different attitudes towards it, and it's like any offshoot of anything, right? So you've got theatre, and then improv is kind of an offshoot of that, but it's also an offshoot of comedy. Mm-hmm. So it's like a little, and anything that's that kind of little thing, yeah, that people have found and it's theirs, and they create, mm-hmm, this kind of cult status around it. And it is a very liberating thing to do, and the adrenaline from it is great. But I think what it mostly is that a lot of people, use it as therapy, because, mm-hmm, it can be very therapeutic, and you can get to live out a kind of fantasy life on stage, you know, and you can be anything, and people will accept you as anything. Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons one of the reasons we all love Showstopper, all of us who do it, is because secretly we all want to be in Les Mis. None of us will ever be cast in Les Mis. There is not a single person in that group who would ever be cast in Les Mis, because we are not the body shape for it, we're not the age for it, we're not any of those things. But so I can play one night, I can play a child, then I can be an old woman, then I can be the most beautiful woman in the world, then I can be an ugly old hag, then I can be, you know, a man, then you can be anything. And so you just get to play out everything, and you get to be whatever you would ever want to be cast as that you will never be cast as. You know, I am very, yes, well aware of my casting bracket, because you have to be, right? And I don't mind it. I'm like, okay, well, that's what I am. But in improv, you can do anything. So And because it often comes out of someone wanting to change their life, wanting to try something different, you know, I think that's why it hooks people.
Yeah, we've seen that.
And then people get really...
You are selling it to me.
Yeah, well, you will. And also you'll find people who go, this is the way to improvise. And I understand where that comes from. I totally understand where that comes from. Because a lot of it is that, you know, if you want to sell a book, or you want to sell your classes, or, yes, you want to sell your course,
there's a lot of,
you're going to go, oh, so many, and you're going to go, this is the way to improvise, and this is the way that will make all of your scenes perfect, and all of, you know, and there is no one way to improvise. I mean, they all boil down to the same thing, but they're all said with slightly different words, yeah, but it all boils down to the same thing: just listen and then respond. Yeah. Ta-da! You know.
Well, your book is not going to sell at all now.
No,
you've just
talked
yourself out of,
I know, my book is 4 pages long, and the first page says do it, and then the second page says feel it, and then the third page says stop feeling it, and then the fourth page says stop doing it. Ta-da! Acting
secret. Well, it's like, yeah, my stand-up book would be a very similar, in fact shorter.
Yeah,
just be funny.
So
that's all you need to do.
So yeah, I think that's why.
I know, though. I am thinking that all of those sort of the frustrations and the it never really occurred to me before. But yes, like the part in Doctors that I didn't get recently, I could do that. I could live it. I could be Hayley, the bride. In fact, yes, I could redo my wedding. Yeah. Childbirth, do that better.
Can do it all again.
Yes, it's very beguiling. Yeah,
and it's also very communal, and some people love community. I'm perfectly happy sitting by myself, yeah, in my house, and, yeah, never seeing anyone ever. But but a lot of people really like, and there is something wonderful about being on stage with a bunch of people who are all working towards the same thing, and it's very supportive. And
this is why I'm obsessed with Amdram as well. Because I mean, Amdram, I think. And I know you're a big fan of the Elaine Page Break Your Legs.
Oh, I love the Elaine Page Break Your Legs.
If you don't listen to Radio 2, Elaine Page, which you're missing out in so many ways.
Well, and
but
I
the
go
best
to
is the Break Your Legs, which is the where people phone in and they can plug what their Amdram group is doing. And I'm just looking at
Hi, blanket. Elaine.
And it's just lovely.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Because I love, I just absolutely love Amdram, because I think, you know, theatre can be quite stuffy and boring and up its own arse. Mm. And Amdram very rarely is. It's just people having an amazing time and really doing what they want to do. And there's drama, and there's, you know, there's always in cast tensions.
Oh, it's great. And you can see it. Yeah, I love it. You can see it. Yeah. We go, this is going to sound awful. I go and see these things with absolute joy and love. I don't go to be horrible or to judge. I'm so I'm very judgmental about a theatre. Mm-hmm. And I'm very judgmental about comedy and improv. I am utterly non-judgmental about Amdram stuff, because I just love it. Mm-hmm. But we go to our local one. I won't say what it is. And we do a thing. We went as a big group last time, and you can do a thing where you bank. So you watch the performances and you decide which performer is going to be best value for money. And then when you see them, you just lean across and go, bank. And that is then your performer for the rest of the show. And you just have to really hope that, you know, you have to do it early enough that you're not missing out, but you don't want to do it too early so that there's someone else better who comes along.
Yes, because often it's a cast of thousands.
There was a great documentary just before Christmas. I don't know if you saw it, about Panto, about Amjan Panto in Nottingham. Oh, I wish I'll have a look on Twitter, see if I can find the woman who... Because I tweeted about how much I loved it, and the director retweeted, and I was like, oh, my God, I love it! Obsessive. So it was on, like, Storyville or one of those, and it was just following this Amjan Panto in Nottingham, and it was... Yeah. It was just the best thing I've ever watched.
Well, because I do think that you do lose a lot of the joy, whatever you, as a performer, you know, when you start making money out of something... Yep. Then you do lose the joy, and that's what's amazing. Well, in fact, we should talk about Amanda, about your. Would you be prepared to talk about your work in theatre?
My theatre, my glittering theatre career.
Yes.
Are you talking about my the work I do? Because I run a. You're talking about the theatre company that I run for adults with special needs.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about, Amanda.
It is the funniest 2 hours of my entire week. And I spend a lot of time here working with comedians as well, but
which is never any fun.
Which as soon as the microphone's off.
To be honest, yes.
But no, it is amazing. I mean, because even in as much as I mean, because they all know each other very well, because the charity runs various things. I'm going to plug them. They're called Outward. They're fantastic. They make sure that these adults live in an environment which is safe, which they, you know, they're not next door to a crack den, and they give them things to do. They involve them, and so they all have various groups that they can join if they want to. Art groups, music groups, drama, and they also have a once a monthly social. Now this is an environment where they can get absolutely twatted. They can drink as much as they like because they are adults.
Yeah.
And some of the gossip I have heard from some of these socials.
See any dramatic?
Yeah.
It brings it out in people. Yeah. Because you do see it like in professional theatre where people are always running off with someone that they've worked with, you know, and you have to watch it. But yeah, I mean, Amdram, it's right.
I come from a very small town as well where I was involved in stuff at the local theatre, a couple of pantos, and my dad used to do some stuff there, but he was mainly did stuff in another town. It was because it was slightly better and it was a bit more operatic, and my dad is a very good singer. But it was the backstage politics were absolutely fascinating, and people, you think that people are actually, oh, it's such a good laugh, but people take it very very seriously, and they and also they have normal jobs in the town as well, so they might be working in the newsagent during the day, but oh, at night she's Cinderella.
Yeah. See, they're doing the same thing. They're living that fantasy kind of...
There's a brilliant Kurt Vonnegut story, which I will look up while we play another record, which is just the most glorious thing, which is about an Amdram company where there's an amazing actor who is sort of flourishes in this Amdram company, and it's really beautiful and really moving and encapsulates all of this perfectly. Also, the other thing as well, I'll look up what the Kurt Vonnegut story is, but the other thing, if you want to get a glimpse into the backstage world and the passions and the tensions, then the Crankies autobiography is absolutely, you will not regret.
This is the one with the swinging, isn't it?
It is. They do a bit of that. But there's also, it's brilliant. In fact, shout out to, there's a man called Eamon Ford who is on Twitter. And if you look at Eamon Ford's Twitter feed, look up Eamon Ford, and because he's sort of storified excerpts from the Crankies autobiography. If you don't want to read the whole thing, the best bits Eamon Ford has compiled for you. So do look that up, because it's an absolute bloody treat. We should have a record, if we haven't had one for ages. And also, we're into Pim's Hour.
We are halfway through Pim's Hour.
Slash rum. I mean, God, it's all... The whole thing's bloody fallen apart. It's like an Amdram shambles right here. Let's put a record on, get the booze, and then we'll crack the booze open after the record.
Okay, and this is going to be Ruth's choice of record. Would you like to introduce your record, Ruth?
Oh, yes. I've asked for Dolly Parton.
Hey!
Here You Come Again.
Oh, it's only my favourite one.
Me too!
Oh, that's so good.
Here we go.
Lucy Porter on FUBAR Radio.
And in our traditional way, we ruin the best songs. I'd say ruin, I feel bad if Ali's listening. I love the Sting, it's just, you know, it fratches a bit. Anyway, but the wonderful Dolly Parton, who I think we are going to have to do Dolly Parton as an album of the week, because we sort of nibble at the edges, don't we? Mm. We nibble at the edges of Dolly and we never quite get all the way
who
there.
Who doesn't love Dolly?
I know.
Romans.
Yeah, it would be a very good character test, wouldn't it? Just,
yeah.
In fact, what we should do, and I feel by the time you get to my age, and I'm over 40, and I'm willing to admit that, I should really now have a questionnaire when I meet new people, because it would save a lot of time.
It really would. And there's, you know, I think there's a finite number of friends you can have.
Yes, yes, yes. And I, you know, I've got some who are just basically, you know, treading water. I mean, they need to step up or step out.
Or I'm going to start getting out the questionnaire to stopping people on the street.
Excuse me.
Dolly Parton, yes or no? Toilets, something about toilets. That's L7. Do you know a story about L7? What did they do? Oh, that's nice. Do you know what you've done there as well, Ruth? Is that I feel now that we are approaching the end of the show. We're going to crack the PIMS open. It's going to be positivity half hour now.
Yay!
Let's do that.
I'll try.
you don't need to try. You've already done it with your lovely talk and your Dolly Parton. Pick a can, any can.
Can I do a gin and tonic can?
You can have a gin and tonic.
Oh, good.
Amanda,
Pims for you. The Captain Morgan is going to remain just as a... He's there, unloved.
I love that he says, chill me.
Chill me,
chill
Captain
me on
Morgan.
The top.
Captain Morgan was a real pirate, wasn't he?
Was he?
There was a real Captain Morgan. I'm sure there was a real pirate. I don't think he looked like that. They've airbrushed him. They've chiselled him.
That is a pretty hipster tash he's got going on
there.
He's
like a sort of Hoxton pirate.
He's a Hoxton pirate.
The worst kind of pirate. cheers. Clash of the
clink,
cans.
Clink, clink.
The clash of the cans. So for positivity half hour, I'm going to start with a beautiful, wonderful story about a lovely thing. Mm. Which, I mean, it goes horrible in the middle.
Oh.
But it's lovely in the end, okay? It's one of those kind of stories. So Germany's oldest student gets the PhD that she was denied by the Nazis. A 102-year-old German woman has become the world's oldest person to be awarded a doctorate on Tuesday, almost 80 years after the Nazis prevented her from sitting her final exam. Ingeborg Rappaport finished her medical studies in 1937 and wrote her doctoral thesis on diphtheria, a serious problem in Germany at the time. But because of Nazi oppression, she has had to wait almost 8 decades before being awarded her PhD. Her mother was a Jewish pianist, so under Adolf Hitler's anti-Semitic race laws, Ingeborg was refused entry to the final oral exam.
Oh.
She would have passed, but she was denied, and so she moved to East Berlin. Eventually, she moved to America first, then she moved to East Berlin. And in the last month, three professors from Hamburg University's medical faculty travelled to her sitting room in East Berlin to test her on the work she carried out in pre-war Germany. They were impressed, and a special ceremony took place at Hamburg University Medical Center on Tuesday, in which she finally received the PhD that the Nazis stole from her. Amazing story, brilliant woman, born in 1912. She was born in Cameroon, actually, and then moved to Hamburg to study medicine, emigrated to the US in 1938 to escape the Nazis, moved to East Berlin in 1952, qualified as a paediatrician. She did amazing work as a paediatrician as well. Massively reduced infant mortality rates in East Germany. She retired in 1973, and now she's had this PhD. It's a beautiful story, and absolutely amazing that she still at 102 remembers something that she did for her degree, because all mine was reading books and I can't even remember them.
Yeah, no, I mean, I couldn't either. I tell you what made me realise the other day how little I've retained of education. I mean, you know, I can sing all of Les Mis. I can sing all of Phantom of the Opera, and I don't even like Phantom of the Opera, but it's all in there. It's all in there.
It's never going to leave.
I can sing 100 minutes of The Screaming 60s because it's still all in there. But did you see that thing the other week about the GCSE maths thing.
The questions. Yeah.
And kids were kind of going, how would anyone know this? And then there was like, there was a lot of jokes about it on Twitter, and it was very funny, apparently. And then they put the question up, and I went, I don't know. And then then they put up someone who'd gone, guys, it's really simple. I don't know why you're all... And had put up the answer with all the workings out. And I looked at it and just went... That means absolutely nothing. And I will admit, I'm not very good at the scientific mathematical stuff. Mm-hmm. Never was. But I think I got a B at GCSE. God knows how, because I obviously am substandard in every way.
Clearly you can't
really
add up.
Nothing.
Yeah. I know, and they do say, oh, exams are getting easier, but I have an 18-year-old nephew who has been doing his exams, and I look at his revision, and it's just, it's all Greek to... Some of it is literally Greek, but it's all Greek to me. And, I do feel like... I feel for the younger people who are constantly being told that things are much easier now, because
it's really not.
It's tragic, though, isn't it? That I just have visions of you and me in the old people's showbiz retirement home, and we'll just be... All we will be able to do is sing the songs. you'll be on the musicals. I'll be Dolly Parton and Blondie.
They're useful. It's useful somewhere.
Well, I do know what it's comforting, isn't it? It's it's nice that we've retained something.
I couldn't do any of this. I helped my friend's 7-year-old kid with his maths homework the other week, and it was a brain taxer. Really sitting there going, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. But was really like, this is hard.
You know, and I remember when I was a kid, and my dad told me the story. My dad was from Northern Irish. He was born in Northern Ireland, and his family were poor. And his dad had finished his education, you know, like at 10, had never really been to school. And my dad, I remember telling me when I was young, he told me the story about how he was doing his maths homework, and he saw, like, his dad was then trying to educate himself, was trying to do a correspondence course in stuff to improve his career prospects. And my dad looked at his dad's homework and realised that what he was doing was harder than the stuff his dad was doing. And he felt, you know, and then he had to explain something to his dad, and he felt that it was a terrible moment for him as the son, feeling I know more than the father. And I remember thinking what an awful poignancy there was about that and how sad it was. And then now I've realised that my children, in every single subject they do, will have that experience, especially now, because it will be things like coding that I really have no idea about. Mm. And, you know, things are moved on, languages.
They're doing coding at their age.
Oh, you do coding now from, primary.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember when we got the computer at school, right? It was very exciting getting the computer at school. And you basically used it as a calculator. That was really all it was. You added things up on it and went, this is very exciting. And that was basically it, because that was kind of all anyone could do on them.
Well, no, we did. I mean, we did basic programs where you got it to print your name over and over and over
again. Oh, yes.
That was, you know, the line 10.
And it's useful, isn't it?
It is. I'm forever.
Really useful. I use that most days.
I'm constantly programming things.
It was a vision of the future that all you'll really care about on computers is your own name. constantly.
That is true.
But we did. Yeah, we used sort of, we did typing tests and things like that. But because I think at that point the idea was that you will be, you know, the boffins will be the ones who control the computers, and particularly actually as a girl, though, you know, and our school was actually quite forward thinking, and it wasn't, you know, well, you should all be secretaries, even though we did do secretarial courses and motherhood skills and things. But there were enough forward thinking teachers who were like, you will be part of the workforce. But even they didn't, I think, ever imagine that we would be the ones programming the computers. You know, it was and clearly I'm not. So
no,
they were right. They were right.
I still struggle with, you know, all of it. iPads, the works. I've got lots.
Yeah, I know.
iPads and laptops and phones, and
you surround
and
yourself
I can't
with things
use
that remind you how inept you are. I'll just buy another thing that I can't use. That'll be an idea. Here's a similar story, or a connected story, I guess, about education. Fathers not reading enough to their children, says the Book Trust. Mm-hmm. Alarming new research. There's 50% more mothers read to their children than fathers, and 1 in 5 students leaves primary school with poor reading skills. So the Book Trust found that 42% of mothers, compared with 29% of fathers, read with their under ones every day. 71% of mothers, compared with 62% of fathers, read with their 3-year-olds every day. And then blah blah blah, and it goes on, and basically it's a difficult one, because it sort of reads as fathers are failing their children, but then you sort of go, well, we still are in a position where a lot of the time it is the man who goes out to the work and the woman who stays at home. So it's sort of one of those, you know, one of those subjects that you go,
as long as someone's reading to them.
I mean
I grew up in with my dad at work. My mum worked as well, but my dad commuted, so he was often home quite late. And for a long time, we were living in Dover, and he was working in London, so we didn't see him at all during the week. And I don't feel that my relationship with him has particularly been damaged by that, or the fact that he didn't read us bedtime stories.
You
or
can read.
I can read. I've read a book.
She's very keen for us to know all about this.
A whole book.
And the back of a carrot packet. So you've excelled yourself.
You can do loads of stuff. But it's, you know, you kind of go, I think sometimes there's a kind of, the expectations that we place on people to do things a certain way and to, you know, and I don't have kids and I don't want to have them at all, but I have a lot of friends with kids, and it's really interesting watching them kind of, especially with first babies, where they're kind of trying to work out, you know,
what
to do and and how to do it, and this is wrong because I read a book that said it's like this, and it's like I kind of get the feeling that whatever works for you is probably the way to do it.
I know, but you know, unless you're up in the madness of all the surveys, and actually the overwhelming evidence is that actually none of it really matters. Parents have much less of an influence than they would hope. It's because I think in terms of the parenting thing, I think for a lot of people of my generation, she says, making a sweeping generalisation, it was more the emotional unavailability of fathers that was a sort of is the legacy of that generation, that actually it's much more important that fathers can be shown to be loving and caring and the reading.
Well, this story, you know, it made me sort of realise that I thought, yeah, actually I don't remember my dad reading any stories to me at all. He might have done and I just can't remember, but it doesn't make me think that my dad... It doesn't make me think any less of my dad and how he...
doing it. I know they did. Yeah, I know they did. But I don't actually remember them doing it.
The only reading I remember my dad getting us to pick horses... So we would read the names of the horses, and I think he thought his children
were life skills.
Yeah,
it's educational.
Although I wish that he'd spent more time helping me to calculate the odds rather than reading the names of the horses, because I think if that had happened, instead of going and doing an English degree, I might have gone and done something to do with maths that would then be much more useful to you. I'd be coding like a demon now.
We'd all be millionaires.
We would, or if he'd just... come up lucky on the horses a couple of times. But here's a story. Now, this one, we were going to cover this one just very quickly because enough has been said today. But on this theme of women maybe not being encouraged to excel in science, technology and engineering, Tim Hunt, the Nobel scientist, who in a ballsy move went in front of a conference of women saying that women... in laboratory, the female scientists cause trouble for men in laboratories, and he went in front of this conference and said the problem is with women in the laboratory is they three things happen: they fall in love with you, you fall in love with them, and then when you criticise them they cry.
Women cry. Male scientists,
I think he's crying today,
he's crying on the inside.
But just quite an extraordinary thing to say in...
obviously it's a ridiculous argument, but then you could use that for everything, right? Women should probably stay at home, because if they do anything, a man will fall in love with them. They will fall in love with a man, and then they'll make each other cry.
Yes.
You know, that I better not get on a bus just in case someone falls in love with me. I can't help it. I know. But everywhere I go, men just
magnetism.
Fall at my feet.
Well, this is why we only have women on this show, because otherwise, so dangerously. We accidentally booked a lesbian, didn't we?
That was touch and go, wasn't it?
Rosie, I mean, she had to be pulled off me in a bucket of water. she's
no pims for her.
She's only human, but it is depressing.
Why do people say these things?
Well, he is 70 something.
Yeah, but
I know, and it's no excuse.
I mean, you know, my nan was 90 something, and she used to say awful things. And every now and then you'd go, I can't let this one. I can't let this one lie. Yes. I can't. I know you're 90 something, but you've also just said something that is so wrong.
Well, and it is patronising to say, oh, people shouldn't be held to account because they're old. Like, I mean, one of the great loves of my life was a man called Bernard, who I met when I was like 22, and he was in his 80s, and he had fought in the Spanish Civil War. His brother had died in the Spanish Civil War. And he was an amazing radical thinker, and he, you know, gave me lots of sort of the early sort of socialist books that enthused me. And you know, and people like him exist, and, you know, I mean, he had strident views in one way, but I would never have thought of holding back with him and not arguing or discussing, because clearly, you know, that was exactly what he wanted and what he thrived on. And it is a bit, you know, I mean, I do, my father and I have free and frank exchanges of views about, I mean, homosexuality mainly. We have very different positions on gay rights and gay marriage and things, but, you know, I would feel... it would be an insult to him. So yeah, actually, I'm not going to debate it with you because you're
old. I mean,
old.
I'd really like it if someone tells me when I'm old. I'm going to be brilliant when I'm old. I've already decided.
Yeah.
Someone will say, no, that's a ridiculous thing, and that is no longer the held view. I mean, I can't think what it would be, but then that's because we're not there yet.
Well, I'm already out of sync, and I think there like things like Juliet was talking about earlier about transgender issues and. You know, the idea that we are moving away from the kind of binary definitions of gender roles and things like that, that it will be challenging, I reckon. Things, and you know, obviously we can't imagine how that will be, but I suppose I already think that my, you know, my ideas about gender are being challenged, and there's this debate at the moment about transphobia and what constitutes transphobia, and how much, you know, cis women are prejudiced against transgender women, and you know, it's an interesting debate, and I think I am sort of changing and growing and learning all the time with that, and I hope that will continue into my
I mean, I think it's a really we get it a bit in impro just because of the stuff that comes up in impro, you know, and sometimes you say things and you say them clumsily because, you know, you're making it up, and it challenges what you think all the time. You know, and how you express things. We just did the 50-hour improvathon that we do every year, which is where we just improvise for 50 hours straight with no sleeping or anything. And so so you're already pretty challenged because you're really sleep deprived, so your senses gone. So all the things that stop you saying, you know, things that you shouldn't say have kind of gone, and you're really kind of like, right, but you're still aware you're saying them. And there'd been this joke about making films that were remakes of original films, but just with one word changed or something. So it started with, instead of Mutiny on the Bounty, it was the Bounty on the Mutant or something. I can't remember what it was, but it was, you know, just moving things around. So the Mutant on the Botany, that was what it was. It was just like dumb stuff like that. And then one of the things that came up was the X-Men. And they said, do this as a film. So it was the X-Men. So they were no longer men. And it was a dumb joke that came out of, you know, something. And then a bit later on, we had to do the film of the X-Men. And it was really interesting because those of us who went up to do it kind of went, we're not happy making fun of this. And it actually became a discussion. It wasn't a film. It was a bunch of people discussing what it is to be transgender, what that means. And also it made us all really realise that we don't know, like, you know, because it's such a thorny issue, you know. Are you a he, are you a she, what do you want me to call you? And that's different for every single person. So as we were kind of discussing it, and I think there was a girl in the audience who was transgender, and she was saying afterwards, she went, oh, it was really interesting hearing you talk about it and trying to work out what it all was, and just trying to be, you know, as open and honest about it as possible, and as, you know, I don't know.
It is, because with comedy, generally, you know, the easy way to get a laugh is to fall back into stereotypes and perpetuating the kind of the comfortable assumptions people have. I mean, interesting with the Caitlyn Jenner thing, that, you know, you sort of do look at the jokes that people are making, and it's, you know, and there is the sort of sniggering and the, you know, people love to you know, it's that thing of, oh, I love being un-PC. And you go, well, no, really, what you're just being is lazy and cruel. You're just kind of, yeah. And cruel, yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so anything that sort of challenges that is interesting. But as a comedian as well, my fear is that getting older, you do become like a Jim Davidson, where you kind of go, well, what's wrong with that? That would have killed him at the Comedy Store in the 90s. Yeah. Why aren't you laughing?
Why are you feeling? Come on, guys. But then I kind of hope that by doing what we do, that you get to know what all the changing views are. And, you know, and I like to think that I'm open-minded.
Mm. In fact, you know what? Someone who went to see Jim Davidson recently said that actually... it was really interesting that he did a lot of stuff about his recent life and about, you know, Operation U-Tree and all of that. And they said, well, that was really interesting and thoughtful and technically brilliant and amazing. And then he would just slip back into doing a sort of 70s, 80s style set. But obviously there is something there. And you just kind of hope that, yeah, what you will do is always listen and hope that that's ideal.
Yeah, or hang on, maybe I should stop doing this stuff.
Because when we get into our dotage, people won't be challenging us on our views. They will just be saying, please stop singing. Stop singing the songs!
You can't remember your views. You learnt them, but you've forgotten them.
It's all Les Mis now. That's all you've got. Oh, dear. Yes, well, good. Now, we've only got 5 minutes left. Should we just
a couple, really? Because we have a song to go out on, so...
Damn it.
Well, this is fun. Know, why don't we just say again. The next person can't come in yet?
Yeah.
And we'll just keep going.
I mean, come on.
It's a pre-record.
Well, then.
It's Mr. Pre-record who will be very upset.
Although, yeah, no, but you've got to go and get a train, haven't you? Amanda?
I do. Oh. We're talking logistics now. But
yeah. Anyway,
we could just stay here on our own.
Yeah, we could.
No, come on, you trust us, right?
I'll just leave your mics up.
That's it. We'll stay till all the carrots, till all the air-dried carrots have gone, which could be sometime. Well, so shall we find out what you're up to, Ruth? Have you got anything to plug? I mean, I am.
We're doing Showstopper at the Udderbelly. Every Sunday until the 12th of July, I think, is our last one. And we've got a kids show as well. Next Sunday is the last one of those we've got. And that's really fun because we just let them do everything. So we don't have to make up any plot because it's all them, which is brilliant. So that's there. And then
the Underbelly is the Big Purple Cow. The Big Purple Cow on the South Bank.
Then we'll be up in Edinburgh for the whole festival. We're at the Pleasance this year. We've moved. I think that's 10:30 every night for the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then Lucy and I are recording our... Lucy Trod.
Friend of the show.
Are recording Trod and Brat, the second series of the radio show, which... I think you'll be able to get on those SRO audience
standing room
things.
Only, yeah.
And I think that's the 20th and 24th of July.
Very nice. I'm going to find that woman on Facebook who is horrible and just...
oh, yeah.
I'll invite her along, chess. But not let her come in. Just sit outside with her. So listen to the laughter, see? People are enjoying that. Lovely. Well, that's marvellous.
Thanks very much.
I'm delighted to have had you. Should we play a record?
Yeah.
Is it going to be Blondie?
It is going to be Blondie.
Well, this is our only opportunity to sing along. Which one have you picked?
I thought it would be fitting to play Just Go Away.
Oh, yes.
Are we comfortable with the words there?
Yeah, no, but carry on anyway.
All right, I can play it Hanging on the Telephone.
Yeah, no, just play Just Go Away.
All right, just go away.
It's lesser known and it's, we'll sing along. You might not hear us, listeners, but thank you very much. And thank you, Amanda.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you to Juliet Burton.